Well, hey, thanks for having me. At least virtually, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm at home in Phoenix, Arizona, but joining you in Atlanta today. I have a relatively simple message, and my simple message is this: that there is more joy to be found in owning less than we can ever find constantly pursuing more. This is a message that I think most of us already know to be true. The problem is we live in a world that tells us the complete opposite message. We see, on average, 5,000 advertisements every single day. So that's a million by the time we reach the age of 21. And every message, every advertising message, at its core, is telling us that our life will be better if we buy whatever they're selling. Their life will be more comfortable, it'll be more happy, it'll be more luxurious. Whatever it is, our life will be better if we buy whatever they're selling. And when you think about it, that's really the heart of every advertisement that we've ever seen. And what I think what happens is we hear this message so many times from people who are so good at it that we very subtly begin to believe it. And we begin to buy into the belief and the assumption that our life will be better if we have more. And so slowly, we start living lives wishing that we had a bigger house. We wish we had a nicer car. We wish we had more trendy fashion. We wish we had the newer technology. We wish we had the more modern toys. We wish we had this and that and this. And so what I want to do today, maybe more than anything else, is simply remind you of something that you already know to be true in your heart. And the way I want to do that today is I'm going to share my story, and then we'll have a little conversation for you guys around your table, answer some questions at the end. Let me start with my story, because I didn't start out wanting to live a minimalist life. As a matter of fact, I grew up living, I don't know, pretty typical American middle-class life is the way I describe it. But despite my middle-class upbringing and first 10 years of marriage and all of that, I have had two streams of discontent that have flown through my life. And they say that discontent is the greatest seed of change in our lives. And so for me, I had two. Number one, I was always a little discontented with my finances. Can anyone relate? Can anyone relate to being a little uneasy about their personal finance situation? I think I just saw the stats this week. It's something like pretty close to 80% of Americans have financial related stress. About three quarters of us live paycheck to paycheck. And so I had financial related stress. I had a little discontent with my finances. No doubt some of you do as well. What was interesting to me, though, looking back over my life, is that in the first 10 years of marriage, we had three relatively modest but significant pay increases. And it was interesting to me that I had more money coming in, but for some reason was never able to get ahead financially. And it just never sat right with me. I could never quite figure out why that would be the case. The second stream of discontent flowing through my life, I began to articulate as I was growing discontent over the focus of my life's energy. And this became clear on a Saturday morning 16 years ago. Memorial Day weekend, I was living up in Vermont. And Memorial Day weekend was going to be this beautiful holiday weekend. Sunday, the entire weekend was supposed to be gorgeous. So We had set aside Saturday, me and my wife, we had two young kids, to do our spring cleaning on Saturday. Spring doesn't come until Memorial Day in Vermont. So we're going to do our spring cleaning. I had to work on Sunday, and then Monday we were finally going to go to the lake and get to enjoy this holiday weekend. So we get up early on the Saturday morning. My son, Salem, is 5 years old, and we go out to the garage. I'm like, I'll clean out the garage this after the long winter. I'm hoping that my five-year-old son is going to want to participate in this project with me. I said, Salem, everything is dirty and dusty. Let's just pull everything out into the driveway, and then we'll hose it all down. We'll return everything in this nice, organized fashion. I mentioned to Salem to go grab this little plastic bin of things and pull it out into the garage, which ended up being like my biggest mistake of the day, because the plastic bin that I told him to carry out was full of all of his summer toys, like all his wiffle ball bat and wiffle ball and frisbee and plastic golf clubs and everything he hadn't seen for like the 9 month long winter in Vermont. And so as soon as he sees his toys, obviously the last thing he wants to do is help his dad clean out the garage. He goes out in the backyard to play with his things, and I continue on with the garage. Before he goes in the backyard, he turns to me and he says, will you come play catch with me? And I said, no, I'm here to clean out the garage. So you go play. As soon as I'm done, we'll be able to play. So I start working on the garage. I don't know if you've had any of these projects, but one thing leads to another. Hours later, I'm still cleaning out my garage. My son is in the backyard, begging me to come play like every 20 minutes. I'm like, one more minute. I'm almost done. I'm almost done. I'm almost done. Okay. So this goes on for hours. At the same time, I'm cleaning out my garage. My neighbor, her name is June. She's in her 80s and she's doing all of her yard work, which has now become a bucket list item for me that my wife will do the yard work into her 80s. I think that would be wonderful. She hasn't started yet, but maybe sometime between now and then. So anyway, June is, she's pulling weeds and she's watering the garden and trimming the hedges. And I think she's noticing what's happening on my side of the hedge with the project and my son. And at one point we happen to walk past each other on the boundary line. And she says to me, sarcastically, she says, the joys of home ownership, huh, Joshua? And I said, well, you know what they say, the more stuff you own, the more your stuff owns you, which I don't know. I had read on a cat poster somewhere at some point and I never really figured out what it actually meant. She responds with a absolutely life-changing sentence. She says this to me. She says, you know, that's why my daughter is a minimalist. She keeps telling me I don't need to own all this stuff. And I stood speechless for a moment, as if this was the first time in the world somebody had told me that I didn't have to try to own everything in the world. But I remember looking at my driveway, and here was this pile of dirty, dusty possessions. I would have said, of course, just like everyone else, that my possessions aren't making me happy. I'm not looking for happiness in my possessions. But out of the corner of my eye, I saw my five-year-old son swinging alone on the swing set in the backyard, where he had been all morning long by himself. And suddenly I realized something, that not only were my possessions not making me happy, which all of us would say, but even worse, all of the things I owned, all of the things I had accumulated, were actually taking me away from the very thing that did bring me happiness in life. And not just happiness, but meaning and purpose significance and joy. It is one thing to say that our possessions aren't making us happy, but it is something very different the moment we realize that they might actually be keeping us from happiness and living a fuller, more abundant life. It's a light bulb moment for me. Ran inside. Kim was cleaning. I don't know. She's cleaning her third bathroom of the day. And I'm like, Kim, you'll never guess what June just said. She said we don't have to own all this stuff anymore. And Kim was like, you know what? That sounds pretty good right about now. I said, I know. Doesn't it sound so freeing and so wonderful? And so I ran to the computer and I typed in what is minimalism. And what was interesting to me is up popped all these different people, all these different personalities writing about their experience with minimalism. Up pops this whole world to me of people all around the globe who have decided that they are going to own only the things they need to own. Like, what a crazy novel idea that we would own just the things we need to own. Like, who does this, right? And so I'm reading about all these people, and it's really interesting to me. I'm reading about a 20-year-old who's moving to new countries, living out of a backpack. I'm reading about this college professor in San Diego who has a family with two young daughters. I'm reading about a couple in Portland in a bunch of debt, and they're trying to get out of debt, and they're moving into a tiny home. The couple that moved into the tiny home in Portland, they had limited their 100 possessions down. They had limited their items to just 100 items. Like they owned a 200 square foot tiny home, two forks, two cups, two plates. They got out of debt in no time, as you can probably imagine. But I'm reading their story and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know. I'm a family of four. I probably need more than two plates and two cups. To be honest, I probably need more than four plates and four cups and four forks. I was a pastor at the time. We were doing a lot of premarital counseling. We would have the couples over for dinner. I had three different small groups that were meeting in my house over the week. And it occurred to me that I wanted to pursue minimalism. I wanted to own less, but my version of owning less was going to look different than any of the examples I saw online. And it's true when you think about it. Like, we all live different lives. We have different hobbies. We have different passions. We have different family sizes. We live in different parts, the city, the suburbs, the country. And so what we need to own is always going to look different from one person to another. So minimalism is very freeing in that way. But more importantly, what I learned is that minimalism is essentially about values. That what is important to me will always dictate what type of things I'm going to own and what type of things I remove so I can focus more on that value, if that makes sense. The way I define minimalism is this. Minimalism is the intentional promotion of the things we most value in life by getting rid of everything that distracts us from it. It's about focusing more on our values. It's about focusing more on our pursuits, our passions, the things that are most important to us by getting rid of all the other trinkets and trivial things that we've collected along the way. I'll sum up my story. I called my mom that night. Well, my wife and I eventually went through our house. We got rid of 60, 70% of our things. I've never missed a single thing that we got rid of. At one point on that Saturday, I called my mom. And I'm like, Mom, we've decided to become minimalist. And she's like, oh, Joshua, I was I was just watching Oprah. She had some minimalists on the show. Did you know that minimalists don't get their food out of they don't go to the grocery store, but they get their food out of dumpsters. And I was thinking to myself, I don't remember reading that anywhere in the literature that I couldn't go to the grocery store. I've since come to learn that there are a group of people, they call themselves freegans. This is their hobby, and literally it is like their hobby to not spend any money on food. And so you might find them diving in the dumpster. I can see why Oprah would have them on the same show as minimalists, but not necessarily the same thing. But because of that conversation, I started a blog called Becoming Minimalist. I think just two people were reading the blog that night. I wanted to know my mom. I wanted to tell my mom that we were still buying FDA-approved produce for her grandchildren. And so I started the blog. It's grown. We have over a million readers every single month. I get to be here today because of it. And very exciting opportunities. And I just love this message. But one of the reoccurring themes on the blog is whenever I noticed my life getting better because I owned less stuff, I would make a journal entry. And I just called it Benefits of Minimalism. And every time I noticed something happening in my life or in my home or in my family, I would just write it down. I ended with a list of nearly 25 ways my life got better the fewer things I owned. And so I'm going to have you make your own little list. I'm going to give you just about a minute and a half, so you'll need to be quick. But around your table, here is the question. If you were to own less stuff, in what ways would your life get better? In what practical ways would your life get better if you own less stuff? Go ahead, around your table, take some time and just quick rattle off as many as you quickly can. Nice work. Take about 10 more seconds. All right. Now, I am at a terrible disadvantage because normally I would be standing in front of you and I could tell when you are done talking, but I can't hear you. So if you're still talking, I guess you'll still be talking, but I'll let me jump in, especially for the sake of time. I would love to hear your list. I would love to hear you rattle some off and maybe even give me some material for a future article. But let me go through what probably might be on your list, and maybe I can add a few more to it. Most likely, someone said less cleaning. And you are absolutely right. The less things we own, the easier it is to clean our homes and clean our spaces. Really, when you think about it, I always think it is about the cleaning, but It's not so much about the cleaning as it is the time that has to go into cleaning that we could be using somewhere else. And so I always put together less cleaning and more time. Both benefits that come to us when we own less, especially when you think about all the stuff that we have. Like, it's not just the cleaning, it's the cleaning and the organizing and the managing and the maintaining, repairing, replacing, recycling, or how much time we spend working on the front end just so we can go make more money, so we can go spend more time shopping to buy more things to bring home to clean and organize and manage, maintain, and repair. True story, statistics tell us that we spend 2 hours a day dealing with our possessions. 2 hours a day that we can get back. I am convinced, because I know it is true in my own life, that we have no idea how much of a burden our possessions have become until we begin to remove them. So owning less means we have more time in our lives. It means we have more money in our lives. The less stuff we own, the less stuff we're buying. No doubt that came up around some of your tables. And of course, more money means different things to different people. Maybe it means we're able to get out of debt. Finally, maybe it means we're able to get ahead of paycheck to paycheck. Maybe it means we're able to become more generous. Maybe it means we're able to work fewer hours and focus on something else in our lives. So more time, more money, less stress. Clutter causes a lot of stress, and you don't even need to be around clutter to picture this. If you were to close your eyes and like place yourself in the most cluttered room in your home, I don't know, your basement or attic or garage or toy room, like with your eyes still closed, now move yourself into like the calmest room in your home, the living room, dining room, guest bedroom, I don't know, like just a decluttered space. It is interesting that you can even feel it on your shoulders just thinking about being around a bunch of clutter and a bunch of stuff. More time, more money, less stress, less distraction in life, fewer decisions that we have to make in life. This whole idea of decision fatigue, the more decisions we have to make every day, the less wise and smart they tend to get by the end of the day. If we own fewer outfits, we have fewer decisions. If we own, if we had less channels on our television, there would be fewer decisions. Less stuff, fewer decisions, more space. The average American home has tripled in size in the last 50 years, and still 11% of Americans rent off-site storage. The problem with our homes is not that we don't have enough space. The problem is that we're putting too much stuff inside of the spaces that we have. I found more intentionality in life. As we began owning less, I found that I began, that we became a better example for our kids. If you think about it, I don't know what the three most common words are in the American home. If it's, I love you, or if it's on sale, or Amazon's at the door. Like, and then we get, it's so interesting, like, and then we get mad at our kids that they want us to buy them stuff and they want more things or they want whatever their friends have. And like, I think at some point we need to take a look around and we need to look at the garage that we can't park in and our closets that are too full and the kitchen cabinets that don't have enough space and our storage unit down the road. And maybe start wondering where our kids are learning this idea that we would buy stuff and that we would buy things that we don't need. I think they probably are learning it from us. Actually, I know they are. A few more things real quick, just to wrap up. Owning less means I could own higher quality things. Interestingly, Minimalism and frugal doesn't have to be the same thing. As a matter of fact, I found that if I don't have to own 15 pairs of pants in my closet, I could own 3 or 4 or 5 that are nicer and are better quality and actually fit me well. You can take that around for every item, every duplicate item that you have in your home, and just think, if I spent less but on higher quality, I could have better things. Better for the environment. I'm sure you all mentioned that. That's good. More gratitude, more generosity, more contentment, less comparison with other people, a better understanding of myself. I began to understand why I held on to things, why we buy more stuff than we need. Here's ultimately what this boils down to. When I owned less stuff, I found that I had more money, more time, more energy, more focus, more intentionality in life. Minimalism meant I could devote more of myself to pursuing my greatest passions in life. And we're all going to define those differently, but minimalism frees us up to do that. At one point, it took us about 9 months to go through our entire home. At one point, I don't know, 4 or 5 months in, my wife and I are, I don't know, decluttering our second or third bathroom and just getting rid of half the things in the room. And we were reflecting on how much our life had changed and how much our life had improved by making this decision. And at one point, I turned to Kim and I said, "Where's minimalism been my entire life? Like, how come no one told me about minimalism before my mid-30s? Like, where has this been?" And I stopped myself mid-paragraph because it occurred to me that June, my neighbor, wasn't the first person to tell me about minimalism. Jesus was saying the exact same thing 2,000 years ago. He was telling us life doesn't consist in abundance of possessions. Sell your possessions, give to the poor. You can't inherit the earth and inherit heaven. Like, he was talking about this over and over and over again. But for some reason, I don't know why, for some reason, every time I heard Jesus telling me to give up my earthly possessions to follow him, I would think to myself, "Man, that is a heavy bar to cross. That sure sounds like a boring way to live. That sure sounds like a sacrificial way to live. I get it. I'd have rewards in heaven, but I don't know. I really kind of want to enjoy my life today." Until I started actually doing what he told me to do. And when I started actually putting into practice his instruction about money and possessions, I found that it wasn't a boring way of life. It wasn't a sacrificial way to live. It was a better way to live. It was a life that resulted in more joy, in more meaning, and more passion, and more purpose, and more fulfillment. I have learned that Jesus meant everything he had to say about money and possessions. And when we put it into practice, we begin to actually live out and enjoy all of the blessings and all of the spiritual benefits that he wants to give to us. I am going to end there and open this up for questions. Probably we can have about 5 or 10 minutes or however long Cynthia wants to go. I didn't get into a lot of practical nuggets about throwing away folders out of your kids' nightstand, but we can get to that if you want to. Anyway, what can I answer for you guys?
Hey, Joshua, can you hear me?
Oh, great.
Good. Okay. Does anyone have a question? Oh, I see some. Yay, lots.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you. But also, you had mentioned during your talk, once you had decluttered, you kind of learned more about the why of why you were purchasing more, why you were, you know, for those pieces. I'd love to hear kind of what are some of the kind of psychology behind that of why we kind of fall into those patterns.
Yeah. Nothing pretty. The way I usually tell the story is I took a van load of things to Goodwill. It felt great. I took a second van load of things. It felt great. By about the third van load of things that we began taking to our local drop-off center, I started asking myself some pretty difficult questions. Like, why in the world did we have three van loads of things in our home that we didn't need? Why was I keeping this stuff? Why did I buy all this stuff? Like, what was the motivation that would cause me to do that? And I think that it looks different for each person. I kind of stay away from, there's some conversation to be had about scarcity mindset and the psychology of the way we grew up and some of the things that we learned. Like there's some things that personality types, like there's some conversations that go around there. But man, for me, a lot of it was just, I was a little more selfish than I would have liked to admit. I was a little more jealous of other people than I would like to admit. I was a little more wanting to prove my success to other people by the things that I owned. I had a higher view of what I thought I deserved. I was a little more discontented, a little more discontent than I thought. I think a lot of times our excess is an indication of our discontent. And that a lot of times I think we actually are looking for happiness in our possessions. We're looking for security. We're looking for happiness. We're wanting the world to provide what only God can. And when we start searching for those answers in the world and it doesn't provide them for us, we just keep thinking that we need to accumulate more and more and more. It's like you can never get enough of that, which will never fulfill you. And so it was a tough process, but I think it, I always think we can't begin to overcome some of those unhealthy motivations in life until we start to recognize what they are. So it's a helpful process for sure.
Hello. So I'm somebody that I'm still like working on my career. And when you said the average person spends 2 hours a day on their stuff, I was like, I wish I had 2 hours a day to spend on stuff because I definitely do not. So I guess my question is for someone who is busy, which is everyone here because we're moms, what are some tangible, actionable, like, items to get us started on the purging process? And, like what's I guess what's an easy way to decide, like, what stays and what goes? And I guess it's what's something that we can do with the little time that we do have?
Yes, brilliant. The way I think of this and the way that is a helpful way to think about it is every hour that you put in removing things you don't need results back in more time in the future. So it's legitimately like an investment. I invest an hour today, which means I save several hours over the next week and the next week and the next week and the next week after that. I say the stat that we spend 2 hours a day on our physical possessions, and you will be shocked. You will be shocked at how much time comes back into your life the fewer things you own. My suggestion would be, if we're really busy, to think about areas of my life where owning less would make my day a little bit more efficient. So I think of clothing as like a great example. Clothing can be a hard place to start for people. So maybe it's not the best place to start. But if your closet had half the number of items in it, then picking out clothes in the morning is going to be easier. Putting things away after laundry is going to be easier. Doing your laundry is going to be easier. Replacing clothes that wear out is going to be easier. You'll notice it right away. I think of like getting ready in the bathroom. How can I streamline that? How can I declutter? How can I own just the things that I need to own to get ready in the morning and the evening and get rid of everything else? It'll become more efficient. I think of like the kitchen, if we have overflowing cabinets and drawers. Okay, I'm gonna get rid of everything I don't need in this kitchen space, and suddenly cooking's gonna become easier, cleaning's gonna become easier, putting things away are going to become easier. So those are some places that you could start, and you could start to see some of those time dividends come back, which you could then apply to some of the other spaces in your home, the living room and the bedroom and the home office, and spaces that will provide more calm and will become easier to clean and will help you rest a little bit better. But some of the quick wins in terms of saving time might be some of those places that we actually use frequently.
Okay, Joshua, I think we have time for just one more. So here it is.
Okay.
Hi, I find that a lot of my clutter has to do with my kids or just what the future is going to look like. So maternity clothes. I may have another kid, but I'm not pregnant right now. And do I save them? And like the baby toys, well, I have a three-year-old, but if we have another kid, then it might be a boy or a girl. And then we need to save all the toys because we don't want to rebuy toys later because you spent money on them. And so now I have this whole like house full of toys and clothes because I'm saving the next size for, you know, I have a three-year-old, but I'm saving her clothes for the one-year-old. And how do we handle stuff with our kids and what the future looks like when we don't know if we're going to, what the future is? Does that make sense?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. So, okay. So the first thing I'll say is this. First, when you said kids items, I was thinking to myself, okay, good. I get to say what I always want to say, which is this. It would be entirely unfair for you to come this morning and be motivated to declutter and motivated to own less and then go home and make your kids and or spouse go first. How do I declutter my kids' toys? How do I get my husband to declutter? Always, you start with your own things. And you get rid of your own clothes, you get rid of your own some of your stuff around your hobbies, like areas of the home that you're in charge in. Like you focus on your own stuff first, and then by the time your kids have seen you do that, then you'll be able to have that conversation with them. They'll be ready for it. It's just unfair to force them to go first. In relation to your specific question, If I know I'm trying to get pregnant, and I know that this is something I want and something that I'm trying to do, then it would make sense that I would hold on to some of the maternity clothes, some of the supplies. I will say there are plenty of people giving away maternity clothes and plenty of people with baby supplies in their home that aren't being used. And so there's a little bit of, but I have to have it new. If I did get rid of what I needed and I did get pregnant again, especially some of the things, maternity clothes, maybe, I suppose we're looking for specific sizes. I don't know. Maternity clothes have different sizes. When it comes to babies' clothes, kids' clothes, I think there is a line that we need to think about. And at some point, we are holding on to things for a potential possible need in the future. But those are things that could be used today by someone in your community who needs them. And so I need to think to myself, I'm going to hold on to these because I might maybe need them in the future. But there's someone down the street who needs those clothes today, who could be wearing the maternity clothes now, some single mom, some CareNet pregnancy center who's helping families who have to decide if they're going to eat or if they're going to buy diapers. Like there are people who could use those things today. And so I won't answer the question for you specifically because, although I think baby's clothes, it's got to be the same season and the same gender. And like there's a few extra things when it comes to the clothes. But man, I think there are a lot of things that we hold on to because we think we might need them when there's someone down the street who actually does need them today. We need to decide if that's wise, if that's who we want to be, if that's what God called us to be, and what that looks like for our individual specific lives. So I don't have a direct answer for you, just some things to think about.
Thank you so much, Joshua. You've been so helpful.
Oh, wonderful. Good. I can see clapping, so I'll take that as a good sign.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.